Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Today, we're visiting two countries that prove good things come in small packages, Belgium and Belize. In a moment, Fernando Mengi joins us to tell us about his home country, Belgium. At the crossroads of Europe, wedged between Germany, France, and the Netherlands, Belgium offers an exciting mix of cultures.
The Belgians are more the laid back. We are really beloved in Europe for our hospitality, our openness.
While Brussels bustles as Europe's new capital city, just up the road is Bruges, one of the most enchanting medieval towns anywhere. Then, we'll head just south of the Mexican border to Belize. This former British colony at the base of the Yucatan Peninsula offers a surprising mix of Caribbean and Latin American culture. Belize is famous for some of the best scuba diving and backcountry jungle trekking anywhere. We're packing for two completely different climates as we head for Belgium and Belize on today's Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. Yes, great delights do come in small packages. I'm Rick Steves, and today we're looking at two little countries that pack a big sightseeing punch. Belgium is the home to the European Union capital, where the new United Europe charts its future. Tour guide Fernando Mengi joins us in a moment to take your calls about visiting his home country. Then, we travel just south of the Yucatan to Belize, where the Caribbean meets Latin America. It's Belgium and Belize on today's Travel with Rick Steves. I've got with me a good friend who I've known for, I think, 15 years. Wonderful tour guide now. He's graduated from a bus driver to a tour guide, and he is my man in Belgium. And we got Fernando Mengi. Ferdy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rick.
You know, Ferdy, when you think of the family of nations in Europe, the Belgians are kind of like the practical joker in the class or something. I mean, what is it about the Belgians? You don't threaten anybody. You're always ready for a laugh. Explain to me how the Belgians might be distinct from other Europeans, in the eyes of other Europeans, maybe.
Well, specifically in the eyes of the Dutch people, for example. You know, you have the jokes like the Americans and the Canadians, and we have that this thing with the Dutch people. And the Belgians are more the laid-back. The Dutch calls us the peasants, but we are really beloved in Europe for us, our hospitality, our openness. And specifically if Americans come over, you know, I know I lived there all my life, and when Americans come, I have a friend who has a restaurant or a taverna, and they all flock around as American. They all want to speak this English, and they're all interested, and they just love it.
Yeah.
This is a Belgian. They're just open. They love to eat. They love to drink. They're very...
So Belgians are famous for inventing the saxophone.
Yeah, the sax,
that's a good time
yeah.
instrument. Comic books, I think.
Comic people, books, yeah.
What is that business? People think of Belgium for comics.
Well, the comic book is like Hervé is one of the writers, Tintin, like many people know. They even made a movie of Tintin. There was
Tintin?
Tintin, yeah. The guy with the little funny hairdo and the little fox dog.
And that's most of Europe would recognize this.
All of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, they even sold it in Japan. I mean,
really?
Can you imagine
yeah.
a small country like Belgium has something so... known in the world. It's just amazing.
And you've, of course, got, I think, some of the best beer in Europe.
Oh, for sure. We have like 500 different kinds of beers.
You go to a fine wine shop in a little community in Paris, a wealthy neighborhood in Paris. They got their wine and they got a little beer.
Yeah.
And all the wine, of course, is French.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And the beer is all Belgian.
Yeah, it's
so,
known.
So these high-class Parisians know that, man, you go for...
Oh, yeah. And everybody, even the Germans, the Danish, who are big beer drinkers, I mean, but it's more for them, I think, quantity than quality. They know they really respect the Belgian beers. I know when I travel in those countries, the first thing they say, you brought some beer.
Yeah,
well... They really like it.
I mean, that's what my Belgian friends
yes.
bring me when they come
yes,
to our reunion
yes,
here
yes.
in Seattle. Let's say I'm just a tourist. I'm going to Europe. Belgium kind of falls through the cracks. It's a little country. It's not big enough for a lot of people to even... find on the map sometimes. Mm-hmm. Give me a quick tour of Belgium from a sightseeing point of view. What would the highlights be? Where do people
go? The highlights is such an underestimated country. It's had so much to offer. Like I said, I lived there all my life and I still discover some things like, wow, I didn't even know they were here.
And you it's know, tiny.
Tiny.
I mean, how many kilometers? How long on the train across the country?
I think if you go from the north sea and you go all the way to the south, let's say Arlon, which is a city in the south, it takes about 3 hours, 3.5 max.
Okay.
And you're there.
By driving. So you can drive anywhere in the country. Yeah. Brussels would say in the middle. You could drive anywhere within an hour and a half.
And you're pretty much on the outskirts of the country of Belgium.
Okay.
And it's got everything to offer. It's got the North Sea. It's got the medieval towns. It's got the Golden Age, which actually ended after the Inquisition of the Spaniards, and it's in Amsterdam. But you got the same architecture: Antwerp, Bruges, Ghent, beautiful cities. You got Brussels, the capital, now actually the capital of the Union. And the south, it's like time stood still there. You have the Wallon part with all the monasteries, the beer brewing, the cheese making monks, and so forth. It just is a country that has a lot to offer.
Now, you said Walloon.
The Wallon is the French part.
So yeah. There, Belgium, small as it is, still the north half is Flemish speaking.
Yes.
And that's like the Dutch.
Yeah.
And the south half is French speaking.
It's French speaking.
So is there more than a linguistic gap there? How does the personality change?
It's an eternal that has been going on for such a long time. And in the beginning, when I was 18, you know, way younger, we had this conflict between the Walloons and the Flemish. But we're getting along so well that lately, it's not an issue anymore. Political, I mean, it went bad. I mean, we had governments falling over the language problem.
Is that right? What language dominates?
Dominates Flanders now, the Flemish.
Is that right?
Yeah, because we have a better infrastructure. We have the bigger industry.
And like you said, Wallonia or whatever, what is it called where the Walloons live?
Wallonia.
Wallonia. Yeah, you said that sort of time stands still.
Yeah,
almost.
The infrastructure didn't move on too well because we have three governments.
Yeah.
We have the national government, a Flemish government, and a Walloon government. And they're trying to work together. It's working way better than it used to be.
So the Flemish dominate. And as in most countries, the northern half seems to be a little more industrious and hard-hitting.
Industrious, hard-hitting.
And the south half has better beer and knows how to relax.
Better beer, more cheese, and more relaxed. It's more the...
better cheese.
To it, yes.
Well, you're right on the border of France.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brussels, the capital, the dominant city, mm-hmm. is... primarily French-speaking, though, isn't it?
Well, actually, it used to be because, you know, all the noble, I said the blue-blooded people flocked to Brussels because this was the main hub. I mean, Brussels exists in the year 900-1000, so it's about over 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the French-speaking. The blue-blooded people spoke French, right?
Okay.
Now, because the Flemish have old industry, the more money is in Flanders, and now Flemish is more spoken than French.
Really? So the Flemish language was the peasant's language.
The peasant language.
And the aristocrats that ran the country happened to be French. They would be educated.
And the funny thing is that all those people, the Flemish part, who had a little bit better off, who were barons or dukes, spoke French with a Flemish flair to it. That was kind of funny.
That's
to
fun.
Hear.
Well, that's the great thing about Europe is all these cultures mixed together. Yeah, it's just a demographic stew. By the way, I'm talking with Ferdinando Mengi. He's a tour guide friend of mine from Belgium. And we're talking about a little country that is one of Europe's great secrets, Belgium. Mm. If you go way back in history, Belgium and the Netherlands were the same country, weren't they? Were they one country ruled by Spain or what?
Before 1830, it belonged to Holland, the House of Orange.
Oh, the House of Orange, okay.
Yeah. And then they rebelled. Well, at first, very before that was Burgundy, you know, the Dukedom of Burgundy. The Dukes of Burgundy ruled that part, which is now Belgium.
Right.
Then the Dutch took it back. And it was for a short period, they rebelled to Belgium against the Dutch. And in 1830, we had our independence from Holland. And since then, it's our independency. So 1830, we're actually a very young country, only 170 years. And we revolted and we had our king, which was actually, by the way, a German. It was Leopold I.
So, was that right?
Yeah.
So sometimes a little independent country shops around for some top-end royal blood. And they don't even need to be from their country.
Yeah, this was Saxon. Coburg was the name.
You just wanted some available royalty who could move in, occupy the palace and run your country.
Yeah.
Now, I was just in the royal palace last summer in Brussels, and there's a new museum there. Mm-hmm. And they've opened up a big wing of it. And to me, I can't recall going into a country where the people love their royal family much.
Still,
there's incredible respect in Belgium. Tell us about the royal family in Belgium.
Well, the royal family, I mean, when King Baudouin, you know, or Baudouin, like they say in French, died, I mean, it was enormous. I mean, he was, his body was put up for the people. There was a line for about 3 days seeing him, you know, his dead body. It was amazing.
To remember him.
To remember him. And even the king we have, we say this time, this is going to be our last king because it cost us too much, because having a king cost a lot of money. But anyway, it's not, because now they're looking for the next king.
Is that right?
We have this Albert, and now the son Philippe is probably going to be the king.
So if you're giving advice to other royalty to stay in good with your people, how did the Belgian royalty do this? Why do you folks like your royal family
so much? Because it was a kingdom since day one, you know, since 1830.
But how are the royal family operating today? Are they just jet setters?
If I might speak my mind, I don't think we really need a king. It's just we're one of the few kingdoms in the world. Well, we have England and Holland and Spain, and then...
Well, they're constitutional monarchs.
But
They're figureheads. Mostly,
they're figureheads, and it's pretty much the same thing in Belgium. They have no political influence, but the king has been sent, like Prince Philip, for example, the son of the king, he does all those political kind of travel, and he represents the country of Belgium. It's more like you said, a figure.
And if you go back to World War II, didn't the royalty of many of these European countries kind of keep the spirit alive during those dark times?
Yes. When they're very, very, I say, royal... feeling. I mean, I have nothing against the king, but right. we prefer sometimes, it's just a mixed thing, but the older generation love the king.
They love the king.
They will like to keep him.
Speaking of World War II, are there, in our country, we have a lot of, when I was growing up, there was a lot of depression mentality, we called it, and everybody was remembering they grew up in the tough times of the depression and so on, even 50 years later. Mm-hmm. 50 years later now, 60 years, I guess, is there still scars of from World War II in Brussels?
I don't think so.
So you're beyond that?
Beyond that.
That's great.
And I must say that my mom, God bless her, she's 80 years old, and she's the last generation who actually witnessed the war.
Right.
So if I want to know something from the war, I talk to these people. I think in 10 years from now, I hope not, we all have to go by book. So, but right. the scars right now, no. They all way beyond that point.
And what about the attitude toward German people? Because Germans gave you guys a tough time 60 years ago. Any problems now?
The funny thing about the Europeans, we all have to say about something. Ah, the Dutch this, and the French this, and the Belgians this, and the Germans. The Germans is a well-known fact, and I do apologize for all the German listeners. It is a fact that the Germans think they're a little bit higher than us. They still have that kind of... And they're doing well. It's a great country. Don't forget that they have an automobile. They have old inventions came basically from Germany.
Well, you got,
Yeah, but they still have that. And the Germans, if we know, if they come over, they're Germans. We know.
So there's this sort of a little brother kind of thing, brother.
Yeah. But we're getting along pretty well in Europe.
You can like a little brother, you can bug your big brother and do it in
fun. Of
course,
we can.
All right.
We can.
A lot of people call Brussels the little sister of Paris in different ways. How would you compare Brussels to Paris?
Brussels to Paris, I think, we are gourmet people, gourmet eaters. We love our food. Don't forget that Belgium is one of the top five cuisines in the world right now.
I've heard people say you eat as well as the French and as hearty as the Germans.
Exactly.
So it's none of this nouveau cuisine.
No.
Quality cuisine, but good hearty portions.
And the relationship goes to the cuisine.
Tell me more.
It's this Brussels, Paris thing, and the Parisians, as chauvinistic that French are, and I can't say that as a Belgian, they respect the Belgian cuisine, and they know that there are excellent restaurants and the 2-3-star Michelin restaurants, which is something for the French, that they love their cuisine. They think they're the top and for reasons. But that's the little Paris of
so you look at your relationship to Paris as sort of in a
culinary gastronomic.
I want to stay away from touristic cliches. We won't talk about Brussels sprouts or Belgian waffles.
Okay.
But I want to talk about French fries because I love French fries. Mm. And to me, the best fries are in Belgium.
It is. That fries are an invention. But the Belgians came up with the fries. The potatoes are imported by the Spaniards.
Right.
French fries has nothing to do with French. It's the cut.
Ah.
The way you cut a potato is the French way. That's a French cut.
I didn't
know
that.
It's got nothing to do with France.
Okay.
But the Belgians came up with frying this in oil.
Cutting the potato in a French way.
In a French way.
And then
you have the julienne way, very thin.
Right.
And then you have the French cut. That's why you call the French fry.
And what's the other way, julienne?
Julienne is very thin.
I see.
Very, very fine. Right. Then you also do the vegetables, julienne.
I see. And you dip your French fries in mayonnaise?
Yes.
What's the deal?
Well, that's the way we do it. You guys do it with ketchup. We do it with mayonnaise. And actually, when I do the tours, I get people, Americans, converted from ketchup to mayonnaise.
So you got to try it with mayonnaise before you laugh at
mayonnaise.
It, okay?
Exactly.
This is very important. When in Belgium, dunk your fries in mayonnaise like the locals
exactly.
do. There's more with Ferdinando Mengi on Belgium. It's coming right up on Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines, with 4,000 flights to 250 cities in some 40 countries around the world every day. It's easy to book your next flight at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. Ferdinando Mengi is our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. We're taking your calls about Belgium at 877-333-7425. Our email address is radio@ricksteves.com. Hey, we've got some travelers on the line here. I'm talking with Ferdinando Mengi, a good friend of mine from Belgium, and Gary in Michigan. Gary, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
What are you thinking about in Belgium?
Well, we were going to be taking a trip the first time to Belgium. We've been all around from Germany and even to Luxembourg and France and up to the Netherlands and finally decided to do that. And the one question I had, you kind of addressed a little bit. We have some French-Canadian friends in Windsor across the river who told me that Flemish is now the more dominant language and I should learn some Flemish. And I was hoping to get by on some of my elemental French and wondered when we go to Bruges and to Brussels, how best to introduce myself and what language should I try?
The Belgians are known for a multitask language. I speak five languages. And if I say that's in Europe and to a Belgian, it's not a big deal. I mean,
you know, you say that to an American, they go, wow.
Wow, yeah, they just fell down.
You like, say that to a European and you go,
Europeans,
you're educated. Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry too much about speaking Flemish. But if you are good at languages, I would recommend you learn a few Flemish words like how are you, how much cost is, and fun. They will love it. And Flemish, I must say, good luck there, because it's a very, very difficult language. But
that's what I'd heard. It's like Dutch, and I didn't want to really have to invest a lot of time, but wanted to know.
Yeah, but it's kind of neat if you. It's always nice if you can address a person in their own country in their own language, even if it's two words, and it opens doors, and they're going to be flabbergasted by wow.
And if you're not savvy enough about that country, I would imagine if you try to do the thoughtful thing and you speak French to a person from the Flemish-speaking part, it's no better than speaking English.
No. A lot of Flemish speak French and for sure English. But
if you want to impress them, know what they speak in that region.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say don't address them in French in the Flemish part.
Okay.
And don't address the French-speaking with Flemish. You know, we still have that kind of thing going. It's better if you go to the Flanders part where they speak Flemish, try a few words in Flemish, and if you lose it, if you can't handle it anymore, just go with English.
Teach Gary a couple of phrases.
Well, Flemish, for example, hello is, or good morning is, Goede morgen.
Goede?
Goede morgen.
Okay.
You have to roll the
Do that
R's.
Again. Give me that robust.
Goede morgen. It's a very harsh language. You know.
Now, would that sound the same in the Netherlands?
Yeah.
And exactly the same?
Now, let me do the Dutch. I can speak Dutch too. So in Belgium, we say Goede morgen. Goede morgen. In Dutch, it's goedemorgen.
More spit in the
Netherlands. It's more spit and a more kind of a guttural phlegm that you have to kind of come up
Flemish.
With. Flemish. No. Yeah.
One more time. Give me the good morning in Belgium.
Goedemorgen in Belgium. And goeiemorgen in Dutch. It's very similar. It's pretty much like the Americans and the English.
I've got to clean off your
mic. Yeah, I have to clean off the mic now. Okay. It's going to full of spit right now.
What would you say if you're having a beer and you want to say, here's to your health or something?
To store your health is Gesundheit.
Like Gesundheit in German.
Gesundheit in German. So it's a Germanic language. It's pretty similar. So we say Gesundheit. There's a few words. Santé, which is a French version. We say Santé a lot, even in the Flemish part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you can do that. Santé, Gesundheit, Ching Ching, stuff like that.
Gary,
Gesundheit is the real word.
Gary, you're on your way.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have
you're
a great
welcome.
Time.
Will do.
Thanks.
Bye.
And Barry is on the line from Palm Bay, Florida. Barry, thanks for your call.
Yes, Rick. It's just a pleasure to talk to you. I'm one of your biggest fans. I'm retired U.S. military. I spent 24 years on active duty in the Air Force, and I spent 3 years at SHAPE headquarters in Belgium near Mons.
Damn.
And I get back there every once in a very great while. My oldest daughter was born there at the hospital, and she has both a Belgian birth certificate and an American birth certificate. But the thing that I loved about your guest there stole a lot of my fire because I love French fries with mayonnaise, and that's where I learned how to do it. And you did mention the wonderful gaufres, the most delicious waffles you've ever had with cream and strawberries and everything else. One thing I wanted to ask about, where I lived at SHAPE, I actually lived in Suwanee, which is just up the road from SHAPE, and there was a little town on the way to Chevre Air Base, which is about 5-10 miles away from SHAPE, called Auth, I think it was A-T-H or A-U-T-H, and they had a wonderful, wonderful festival every year where they had a parade with these giants that would go in the parades, which was so much fun.
A Mardi Gras kind of festival.
Right. Well, also in Banff, not too far away from Shea.
Yeah, with the oranges. Yeah.
With the oranges.
I used to go
to that every year, and of course the red oranges were all over the streets, and you just walked down the street, and it would just smell like you were in the middle of an orange factory.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I want to know, do they still have that festival in Auch?
Yes, they're called the Gilles de Banff. Gilles de Banff has got this dressed up, look like a clown, but they have this really big heads with feathers on top. And
I've
they have
seen
those baskets.
Pictures of that, yeah.
Gilles de Banff, very famous, of course. This is a tradition we've been going on for centuries, and they still have it every year. Don't
is
ask
this
me what
every
time.
Spring is it sort of tied in with Easter or something?
It's around the spring, I think maybe February, March,
it's
around
probably
carnival.
The carnival, yeah, sort of thing. Different countries do the carnival.
Yeah.
That's the wild time before Lent when you have to give up things, right?
Yeah.
So first you have your wild blowout, then you got your Lent leading up to Easter egg.
But that's still going, and every town in that region, you also have the guys with the pig's bladders. You know, they blow up a real pig bladder, and they throw that at people and stuff. They fill it with water, and it's very funny. That's another part, but it's in that region.
They target tourists.
It's probably
American military from Shape.
Probably Shape, yeah.
Hey, Barry, what is Shape? You worked at Shape?
I was a broadcaster for the AFRTS, for AFN Shape, for 3 years.
But what is Shape? There. Forgive me for not knowing.
Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe.
Wow.
This is the military headquarters of NATO. The political headquarters is up in Brussels, but the military headquarters with the Supreme Allied Commander Europe, who is a U.S. Military four-star general, is there at Shape. But it's 14 nations, and they've members from all the different countries on the staff there. One other thing I wanted to mention quick was that you were talking about the French and the Flemish portions of Belgium. You didn't mention the German portion. Because while I was at Shape,
right.
We had a gentleman from a German-Belgian radio station, but they speak German, from the western part of the country that came to give us a visit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can remember doing is on a weekend driving down the auto route towards Aachen. Just north of Aachen, there's a place where Belgium, Germany, and the Netherlands comes together.
Yeah.
And there's a monument, and you can walk around three different countries just by walking around that monument.
In my language, we call it Drie Landenpunt. It means three, London means land, and punt means point. You can put your foot and you put your feet exactly in 3 points, and you're in three countries.
Wow.
That's when all three come together. And
you're
right, they speak German, a very small, because you know what, us Belgians didn't bring it up, because we had already had enough problems with our languages being the French. You know, let's need the German, because there's such a small minority there.
But you're right. This is where great civilizations come together, in Brussels, and consequently you've got the capital of Europe now there.
Of course.
And you've got such a rich history and a great cuisine.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Barry, thank you for your... Hey, Barry, you mentioned the waffles.
Yeah.
Yes, the gaufres, the most delicious waffles in the world.
Gaufre, that's how you and I would pronounce it. Because
we say gouffre.
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 That's a French, that would be a French...
I lived in the Wallonie portion. I was
famous for the waffles.
I spelled Brussels Bruxelles.
It is confusing, isn't it? You have the
it's
different...
It's a difficult language, yeah.
All right. Hey, Barry, thank you so much for your call.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm talking with Ferdinando Mengi, a friend of mine who's a tour guide from Belgium. Hey, we have an email from Doug in New York City, and Doug said, I've tasted and enjoyed some wonderful Trappist beers brewed in Belgium. He'd love to visit some of the abbeys that produce these beers. Do the monks allow tours?
Oh, yeah. Most of the monasteries, and there's one that pops in my head when I was West Mulla, which is the most famous one. That's where the Trappist order. They call the Order of the Trappist Monks. They've been brewing beer since the year 800.
So what's this connection with monks and beer?
Well, you know what? That it actually originated in Burgundy, you know, when there was this dark Middle Ages when the monks were the most educated people. You know, and drinking water in those days was pretty dangerous. People already knew this. So the monks start studying all this stuff and start growing hops and actually making wine as well, because wine was there for many, many centuries before them. But they found a better solution and actually maybe a better tasting for some people. So they started growing these hops and they started experimenting with this beer. Don't forget that beer was invented way in time, like the Egyptians 5,000 years ago. But these monks started in Burgundy and moved out to Belgium and Germany and so on, because the big hops fields are still in Germany.
Okay.
But they are the ones who actually dig into and start studying and creating this strong
beer. And this
beer.
Is a very strong beer.
Oh,
I mean,
Trappist,
it was considered food, wasn't it, in the Middle Ages?
Well, we always said one beer is two pieces of bread.
Is two pieces of bread. Equivalent.
Like,
the nutritional equivalent.
Bread in my language is boterham. So we say two glasses are two boterhams, which means it's like a sandwich with something. That's how we say it.
Two glasses is a sandwich.
Yeah, because that's why we Belgians love beer, because we actually not only drinking, we're also eating.
Oh, that's right.
That's,
it. Okay.
That's a good excuse, probably.
So if Doug wants to go to a monastery, that what would you recommend?
I recommend definitely there's three that I like. This Westmalle is where the Trappist order is. Then you have Orval, which is also an order. And then you have Rochefort, where you not only have the beer, but also the cheese. Not the Roquefort, you know, but it's Rochefort. Ah. It's a great local cheese and a very local beer. And the monastery dates from the year 1000.
Wow.
It's like you go there, it's in the middle of nowhere. You drive in there and you see... It's just sitting there.
It's a 1,000-year-old monastery. Yeah. They give you a tour of the monastery.
Yeah, and you drink beer, and the vat, it's like a 5,000-gallon vat.
Kim from Atlanta, Georgia, emailed us, and she said she loves Bruges. Yeah. And all the chocolate, lace, good food, beer, gift shopping, it's everything you could ever want to indulge in, she said, indulge in.
Indulge,
I know there's many unique places to see there, and she'll continue to come back and explore more of this walkable town. Mm-hmm. We sometimes use this as a starter city, combining Paris for a quick five-day trip to Europe. Well, that's quite a nice thing to say about the town of Bruges. Bruges is a small town today compared to Brussels, but in its day, it was a very important industrial city as Belgium was really leading the Northern Renaissance, isn't that right?
Yes, it's true. It was also called the Venice of the High North. But Bruges, I mean, who doesn't know Bruges? I mean, of course, it's the lace, the chocolate, but boy, is there more than that. Walkable city, beautiful architecture. If you like that 16th century style architecture, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And it's just a small town. It's kind of walled. It's got this big...
it's got a moat around it, doesn't it?
A moat around it, and it's still got the Begijnenhof, you know, the begins.
And then the mounds of dirt to fortify the moat, and then windmills on top of the mounds.
Yeah, yeah,
what were those? Would those windmills been for... Industry in
it was actually
ages?
It's like the lowlands in Holland, you know, why we had windmills. People, you know, not
to
only
pump
to
out water,
pump up the water, you know, because these were lowlands.
Right.
Bruges was very close
right.
to the North Sea, and we had problems with water. That's why you have canals called the Rijn in Bruges. We still have those, you know, still.
And one of my favorite things about Bruges is that you see all, it's got incredible sights, great restaurants, and
yes.
an abundance of B&Bs. Yes. I got way too many B&Bs that are great to even list in my guidebook. And my favorite thing when I'm working on my guidebooks is I see all the sites, and that's always great. But then I get on my bicycle and I go checking out B&Bs that people have recommended for me in the untouristy part of the town, which has all the same cobbled charm. Mm-hmm. It's just over in the far side of town, still within the moat.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got these wonderful neighborhoods that are just like right out of an old-fashioned Christmas card or something like
that. And
this.
Not only in Bruges, I mean, if you go not even five kilometers, you can drive, for example, a bicycle and it's on that canal. It goes to Damme.
Damme, that's a very popular bike ride.
Damme, that's why the boats came in the old days when Bruges was a very important city.
Realistically, if people have 4 or 5 days for Belgium, and that's frankly as much as most Americans will have, they'd want to spend 2 or 3 days in Bruges, I think, to relax and enjoy that town, and at least one day in Brussels. Mm-hmm. Let's say they have a couple of days for side tripping elsewhere in Belgium. Once you get away from Brussels and Bruges, you'll find no American tourists almost. I mean, it's a real
those
overlooked part. Yeah. Everybody goes there. Where else should we consider?
Well, there's a city that that I like a lot is Antwerp. I mean, it's something that a lot of people overlook, but Antwerp, again, a very, very rich history. Beautiful architecture, again, and also this wonderful restaurants, walkable city, Rubens House, Diamonds, and just to name a few, but wonderful too. And
Rubens House is quite a fine museum these days.
Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of painting, the classical.
What if you want the countryside and just to get out and enjoy nature?
Don't forget that famous World War, one of the worst world wars we had. And an hour from there, you have the where the Germans were kind of held up by the Belgians and the Franks, and you can still see the trenches.
Is that right?
And Dixmude. It's only 45 minutes from Bruges.
So there are sites, of the trench warfare
still
sites
there.
From World War I.
Yeah, and you know, I have to go back to the really beginning of the show when you say, are there still scars? I think these are the only scars, if it's just the literally visual one you can see.
The physical scars are the trenches and the lunar landscape that's been overgrown now.
Yes, but it's overgrown, but it still found bombs up. Once in a while, the farmers,
bombs.
You know, those big mustard gas they and it was really ugly, but it was a very ugly war. But you can still see that today.
Wow.
And that's not too far from Bruges. Oh.
And if you're really into military history, you've got Waterloo.
And of course, Waterloo, that's outside of Brussels.
Waterloo.
You know, the Butte de Waterloo.
Well, the big news for Belgium these days is it is the capital of the European Union. Mm. Explain this to me, Faraday, because you've got Strasbourg also, but is Brussels actually the capital of the EU?
Brussels is where most of the decisions are made. Strasbourg is where the political thing decisions. And you have Luxembourg, I think,
that's where
the European Parliament have their daily powwow. So, but Brussels is really the most important headquarters, I think, from the old view.
That's sort of changed the character of Brussels these days.
You've been to Brussels. I mean, you've seen that whole neighborhood they tore down.
Oh, yeah.
And they built this beautiful new facilities for this EU. It cost billions, but it's there.
Are the Belgians proud to be hosting this?
Of course.
And you're a little country. Is the European Union a good thing for the little countries of Europe?
Yes.
Why is that?
I think that getting us closer together, and I'm sure people said, but are you not going to lose your really...
Identity.
No, we don't. You cannot change a French. You cannot change a Belgian or a German. That's impossible. But it gets us close together. Like this euro, that's one good step for us. This is a wonderful thing, and everybody likes it. At the beginning, the old people, they had kind of a problem with it. But now everybody loves it. Yeah. It's such an easy thing
so
to travel.
So everybody has the same coins.
Yeah, same coins.
What a headache in the old days. You couldn't go 2 hours without having to change money.
Imagine we did tours, and it was just a headache.
Now you can go all the way to Spain and use the same coins.
And that's one step. It's not only because of the money, but people are so used to it. I just traveled a little bit to France last month, and people, it's just so easy to get around. And you still feel you're not in your country. You cross, you're in France. You still have the same food. You just pay with the same money, and that's kind of neat.
Now, how has life changed for Belgians since the European Union? Is it better?
Well, you know what? I just read the paper the other day in Belgium, and we're one of the richest countries in Europe. And I said, wow. Even the most richest people, I mean, everybody has, like, I think, an saving like 20,000-30,000 euros.
The times are good in Belgium.
Yeah. But, of course, it's an expensive country. Don't forget, we pay extremely high taxes, but everything is taken care of. You don't have to worry for your future.
So that's interesting. You Europeans pay much higher taxes than we do, and you don't talk with a disdain about taxes like most Americans do. Why is that?
Well, you know, when I do my tours, people love when I talk about the contemporary Europe. We always talk about the past, 1400 this. That's something very important. People are on the edge of the seats when I start talking about this daily life. Mm. And taxes are high. I mean, but look what we get. You know, we got to do a doctor. It cost me $2.
Mm-hmm. Is it a good doctor?
Oh, yeah. They're excellent. You know, and you can pick any specialist doctor you want.
Mm-hmm. So you've got national health care and you like it.
Oh, yeah. I got, you know, you can get a retirement. If you retire, it's for life. You don't have to necessarily worry for what you're going to have if you retire. In this country, you have to worry. That's why your taxes are low. If you don't save up, if you don't put money aside, and you live off your IRA,
right.
I don't know. It could be trouble.
In Belgium, it's you don't
Take
have the stress.
Not the stress.
What if you're raising children and you're wondering about the cost of
cost of also a totally different ballgame than the United States. I've been traveling long enough in this stage to know this. There's a lot of there's this people's university that costs nothing. They're free.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You can have your kid go to a quality university
for free in Belgium.
And they'll find a place.
Oh, yes.
My goodness.
There's a lot of Americans also studying there.
Hey, we can learn a lot more. I've been talking to my good friend Ferdinando Mengi. Dankuvel.
Alsjeblieft.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you said perfect.
Dankuvel. Thank you very much. Merci bien. We'll see you again soon.
Dag.
As I walk along the street with my mayonnaise and frites, you can tell I'm as happy as can be. With my duvel in my hand, then you must understand I'm a Belgian, so nothing worries me.
For the next stop, it's time for something completely different. Belize. Kurt Kutai joins us in the studio for an overview of the former British Honduras. And we'll check in with a homegrown tour guide in Belize to get first-hand ideas on how to explore the jungle backcountry. Up next on Travel with Rick Steves. 877-333-RICK.
It's great to be a Belgian. I'm not English, I'm not French, and I'm not Dutch. I'm not Spanish, Portuguese or German. I'm a Belgian, so thank you very much.
Hola, me llamo Carlos, soy de Madrid, España, y me gusta mucho viajar con Rick Steves. I just said, hi, my name is Carlos Galvin, I'm from Madrid, Spain, and I enjoy traveling with Rick. Hola, me llamo Carlos, de España, y me gusta mucho viajar con Rick Steves.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. Let's go down to Belize. If you got an old globe, it probably says British Honduras.
That's right.
I think for 20 years, something like that, it's been its own independent country. And I've got with me a friend who runs a tour company that specializes in taking tours around Latin America, including Belize, Kurt Kutai, who runs Wildland Adventures. Kurt, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Belize. When was Belize made independent?
In the 80s.
In the 80s. Mm-hmm. I remember going to Belize City, and they had like a little strip mall and a little one of the little signposts sticking up there. And it goes, Belize, independent since 1983 or something like that. And it's such a charming little country. Everybody seems like everybody knows everybody.
That's right. It is. It's only the size of the state of Massachusetts.
What's it got, like 100,000 people or something? I mean, it's tiny. What distinguishes Belize from the surrounding countries, Guatemala and Mexico?
It's kind of like a mix of them, you know, in the sense that there's a Spanish population, there's a Mayan population, there's a Carib African Garifuna population. There's even Mennonites there. So it's very much of a mix. And then even topographically, it's sort of like the Yucatan of Mexico, but it's got mountains like the highlands of Guatemala and, of course, the Caribbean. And then it has the second largest barrier reef in the world.
Wow. So you've got your – let's review the ethnicity again. You've got the Mayans, so that'd be indigenous Indians.
That's right.
You've got Caribs, which are black descendants of slaves.
Yes.
You've got Mennonites, who are religious people who went there historically from Europe.
Yes. Through Canada and then down to Belize.
And then
the mestizo, the mixed Spanish and British.
I see. And the people who mixed up when the Cortez and the conquistadors came over, and they mixed Spanish blood, or the European blood and the Mexican blood. Okay.
Right.
Plus, you've got this fascinating pre-Columbian history, and you've got incredible natural wonders. You call it a rough and ready destination. What do you mean by that?
I like Belize because there's still a rough side to it. You know, it's they're paving more roads and there's a little more eco lodges, and that's the ready part of it, if you will. It makes itself available in that sense. But there's still places you can get away. It's hot, sweaty, it's dusty. You can get to Mayan ruins that are off the beaten track in the jungle. You know, and
you can go into these little Rastafarian bars.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe the scene in the Rastafarian bars.
Absolutely. And then the Caribbean coast, the Garifuna people, you know, I mean, in the heavy Creole accent, which you'll hear, I think, in just a minute.
In fact, we've got a friend of yours who's one of your tour guides on the cell phone from Belize right now.
That's right. He's leading one of our clients out on the beach right now at the moment.
Introduce us to your friend.
Sam Tillett, say hi.
Hi, this is Sam Tillett from Belize.
And what's going on in Belize right now, Sam?
Oh, well, right now it's pretty nice. This is a nice time of Belize.
You're taking some Americans around?
Yeah, I have some guests now. We already see lots of Maya ruins. We do caving. We do canoeing down the river in real jungle.
So caving, canoeing, Mayan ruins, and I understand you're a great bird watcher.
Right. That's what I was going to tell you. We already got 133 species of bird.
Are your guests right now into birds?
They are into a little bit of everything. They want to see... Because Belize have so much things to offer, so they want to see a little bit of everything. So we're doing that.
So 133 species of birds. That means that's how many you've seen, or that's how many you could see if you saw them all.
That's how many we have so far. We still have a whole bunch more yet to see.
And how many have you seen?
Oh, I have seen like 572 to be correct right now. Right in front of me right now, a bare-throated tiger heron is one of the beautiful birds just. Pass right in front of me just now. Another one coming.
What kind of bird is that?
A bare-throated tiger heron. It's a big bird.
What kind of tiger heron?
Bare-throated.
Bare-throated?
Yeah.
Tiger heron.
Oh, yeah. Just flying by. Okay.
Yeah. Just
and
pass in front of me.
Sam, you're taking your group caving, did I hear?
Yeah, we already did the caving.
What is that?
Caving, what we do is, you know, the Mayan used to do a lot, have these, this one it was a dry cave. We hike up like 700 feet above normal sea level, and then we went down into this cave. It original was created by a river and limestone, so it's easy to go through. And it created a path in there, and that's what the Mayan, they used to go take at this certain cave. They take a whole lot of grain in big pots and store them there. Also, they use them for a ceremonial purpose, too. It's go under the ground. You're under the ground. Walking 150 feet under the ground.
Do you take a flashlight with you?
Yeah, we do use headlamps.
Headlamps?
Yeah.
Do the tourists like that?
Oh, very excited for them, especially when they turn off the light and really see what is darkness.
And listen to the silence.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
Very quiet. Well, this one is a dry cave. I've been through a lot of wet caves, so you could hear the water when you turn the light off and be quiet. You could hear the water actually talking.
Whoa.
Yeah, excited.
Did you guys go to Tikal on this trip, Sam?
No, we didn't. This trip wasn't Tikal.
Yeah. Tikal is just across the border.
Oh, yeah, that's right, into Guatemala.
Yeah, it's just as easy to get to Tikal from Belize as it is from Guatemala.
Hey, Sam, you live in a country where, when I was there, I was impressed by this kind of strange, funky English heritage. You've got little boys running around whose names are Godfrey or Merlin or Rodney.
Yeah, because especially in Cricketry, where the English had settled, we, you know, slavery, we adopt their title. So in Cricketry, you have a lot of Cod, Smith, Cato, Tillet, Juliet. They're all Scottish. Well, you know, it's a different. It's Scottish.
Now, and the language is fun to read. You pick up a newspaper, and it's actually printed in the Creole, like pidgin English, right?
Yeah. It's a broken English made up of African, French, and English.
African, French, and English. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Give me an example of some pidgin English that you might hear.
Okay. I would walk away from you guys right now, and I would say, "Sorte later." That means until later.
Okay.
Yeah. I would ask you again, where they do? That's been what you guys doing.
Where they do?
Where they do.
Yeah, where they do.
Where they do.
Yeah.
I remember the ship sink, the boat sink.
Yeah.
The boat sink in the harbor. That was the headline when I was in Belize City.
Yeah,
the boat sink. All right. Hey, well, Sam, thank you for joining us, and best wishes with your work as a tour guide in Belize.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care, Sam.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'm talking with Kurt Kutai, and Kurt runs a company called Wildland Adventures, and part of his program is taking American groups through Belize. Kurt, when we're thinking about Belize, you can side-trip there from the Yucatan quite easily, can't you?
You can come down from
Mexico.
Is
the border wide open?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when you're going to Belize, you've got this wonderful variety. Most people seem to go down there and they're just hell-bent on getting out into the islands and snorkeling or scuba diving. Got these wonderful reefs for scuba diving, isn't that right?
Yes.
What's your advice on people who want to have a well-rounded experience in Belize? Check that out, but not just be specifically that.
Well, remember, it has the three R's: ruins, reefs, and rainforest.
The three R's: ruins, reefs, and rainforest.
Yep. So if you take all those in, that means you're going to be traveling inland to see the rainforests and the ruins, the Mayan ruins and the jungles, and then out to the coast to see the reefs. You know, because it's easy. There are people of special interest travelers who want to just do scuba, and they stay out on the Keys for special scuba packages or fishing packages. And then I guess you could say there's the fun in the sunset who just goes to the resorts on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
But you really miss everything else that is Belize.
The charm of the Belizean culture.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, and that would be a real shame, I think, to go down there and isolate yourself and just have fruity drinks and other North Americans to, you know, work on your tan.
Yeah, and it's accessible enough with roads and internal flights that you can get around pretty easily.
Now, you just finished an exploratory trip going on a new highway down the south.
Yes, they finally finished paving the southern highway down to the Toledo district, which is the southernmost district of Belize, which borders Guatemala in the south. They always have referred to themselves as the left alone stepchild of the country. You know?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Almost autonomous?
Not quite. Well, only by virtue of the fact that there's
just no
government attention. Yeah.
This is an indigenous
and
Mayan.
It's mostly Mayan people.
Did you notice that when you go down there?
Oh,
more
totally.
Pure
Mayan? Oh, totally. It's almost like being in Guatemala. And
wow.
The opportunities for going to Mayan villages in the mountains in southern Belize is just very similar to that in Guatemala.
Talk about a backdoor experience. So now you can actually drive a paved road from Belize City south.
Yes.
Doesn't Belize have one of these planned capital cities, Belmopan or something?
Yes, it does. Yeah, they had to move it in because of hurricanes.
So Belize City was the historic capital.
Yes.
But it's just too susceptible to hurricanes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is Belmopan just a soulless place, just a bunch of modern
Pretty
country?
Much. I mean, they have a really good archaeological museum if you take the time to see it. That's worth seeing.
Oh, really? Because when I visited, the archaeological treasures were somewhere in the United States just waiting for them to build a museum.
Yeah.
So they've actually got their act together and
they
built
do.
Their own museum.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a humble country.
It is. It
it's
really
a humble,
is.
Charming little country, and mm-hmm. the people speak enough English for you to be – there's almost no language
completely.
Barrier.
Yeah, except maybe in southern Belize in the Toledo district. But the interesting thing about Belize is that all the people that have gone down there or are involved in tourism, everybody is so independent in Belize. They all just are doing their own thing. So all these different lodges and things, they all have their own unique character. Nobody tries to work with anybody else, you know. So when we're trying to organize a tour, or if you're trying to go down and travel there, you know, you really just kind of go from one place to the next, and each one's different.
So you're a tour organizer. You can't just call some big shot in the capital city to
That's
line
right.
it all up.
Not in Belize. Belize. Everything we do in Belize is
people to people.
Direct to people to people.
Wow. So
including Sam. See, with Sam, he's our point man there, really, because, you know, and he has a little guest house in the village of Crooked Tree. You know, backpack travelers stay there, and we take our guests to stay there because it's just truly an authentic cultural experience.
Yeah. Well,
it's not an eco lodge at all. It's just a village.
Now, let's just talk very quickly about Belize's rainforest. They've got a lush environment. What is the attraction for tourists for the rainforest there?
Well, an abundance of wildlife, you know, several species of monkeys, and an incredible bird life there. And then just being in the rainforest itself is just really beautiful. The ecology of the tropical rainforest with insects and interactions of plants and animals, everything you learn when you're in the rainforest. And you know what? One of the best places to see wildlife in the rainforest is at the National Park of Tikal,
right,
where, of course, the ruins are.
Now, that's actually in Guatemala.
Yes.
It's a sort of a remote part of Guatemala. It's almost as accessible from Belize as it is from Guatemala City or something,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, outside of flying from Guatemala City over to Flores,
right,
driving across the border in 2 hours is closer from
really?
Belize.
So really considered a side trip from Belize. And Tikal is probably the premier, what is it, Mayan. Pyramid. Tell me about Tikal.
220 acres of ancient city buried in the rainforest.
How does that compare with Chichen Itza in the Yucatan?
Well, it's Chichen Itza is a spectacular site. Size-wise, I think Tikal is much bigger, I'm sure. Mm. What's also interesting is, you know, what makes Belize interesting is that they're still doing archaeological work, so they're beginning to really open up the ancient city of Caracol, which is across the border in Belize, and Caracol was a rival city with Tikal. So they're learning all kinds of things that at one time Caracol was actually bigger than Tikal.
Wow. So as we pay attention in the next years, they're going to be peeling away the jungle and revealing some of this pre-Columbian grandeur.
That's right.
I remember sitting on top of a pyramid in Belize, looking out across the jungle, and I saw just little green bumps of the jungle.
Exactly.
And my guide said, well, those are ruins that we've yet to excavate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just waiting.
Yeah.
There's sort of an anticipation.
Yeah.
It's sort of the thrill of being some of the first people to see this after they've uncovered it.
That's right. And you can, you know, have a sense of that when you're traveling through there and maybe stumble upon an active dig.
So when people are going to Belize, they're going to see the reefs. They're going to see the Mayan stuff. They're going to do their little rainforest experience. I think the real challenge is to connect with the culture, mm-hmm, to meet the people. What's your best advice on that?
Get into the villages. You know, don't just go to an eco lodge, but and interact with the staff of the places you're staying, because they're just people from the local village.
It's
and
just
then you
Godfrey.
Can, yeah, it's just Godfrey. And Godfrey will take you to see his mother, you know, go over to his house after work. It's that kind
so
of a place.
So be open to that.
Yeah,
open. There's a hospitality, and we should be open to that.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of expatriates, you know, who work in Belize, too, in lodges and in guiding. But, you know, you got to get beyond the expats and get to the local people.
Isn't it, like, really hot and really muggy? Isn't it, like, the worst of the Gulf Coast as far as climate?
Not as worst as in the summertime it can be. But in our wintertime, it's actually really quite pleasant.
So basically, if you go, you're well advised to avoid July and August.
Actually, we've sent people down in summer now because that's our vacation time. So people go to Belize because they want to do the ruins, reefs, and rainforest and experience that, and they can't get away, you know.
Is it still stylish for women to wear curlers in their hairs?
You know, I think it is. When I think back and the scenes of the villages, yes.
When I go to those villages, it's just really striking. They got these bold colors in their curlers, and it's like they dressed up today and went outside and they're having fun in the streets.
Yeah.
We're talking Belize, and my guest has been Kurt Kutai. Kurt runs a company called Wildland Adventures. To learn more about his tour program, visit his website. It's wildland.com. Kurt, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Here at Travel with Rick Steves, we think of our listeners as travel partners and offer lots of ways to participate. The radio section of the ricksteves.com website has message boards for you to continue today's discussion online. And if you're feeling creative, send us a poem. Here's some original haiku we thought you'd enjoy from some of our traveling listeners.
Alex Schreff of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, says Belgium is his favorite country in Europe. He sent us several haiku that he wrote about the country. This one was our favorite. as the pommes frites fry, make my gouffre with whipped cream, and my beer, Artois. Lauren Wilbur of McMinnville, Oregon, has these memories of a trip to the Swiss Alps. Grand glaciered peaks sing, perfect madrigals of stone, priceless Gimmelwald. And Ewan Savela of Bellingham, Washington, had a disappointing surprise traveling in England on International Pirate Day, April 22nd. I soon realized that I'm the only pirate in Penzance. Now what?
Again, we'd like to receive a haiku from you about your travels or send us a short brag about your hometown. Look for details from our 15 Seconds of Fame link. It's in the radio corner at ricksteves.com.
Hufferdecker, it's great to be a Belgian. I'm not English, I'm not French, and I'm not Dutch. I'm not Irish, Italian, or Danish. I'm a Belgian, so thank you very much. Without the Belgians, there would be no saxophone. No Tintin, Captain Haddock, or Poirot. And excuse me if I've missed anybody off the list. These are the only Belgians that I know. Hufferdecker, it's great to be a Belgian. I'm not English, I'm not French, and I'm not Dutch. I'm not Finnish, Austrian, or Swedish. I'm a Belgian, so thank you very much.
You know, one of my very favorite things we ever filmed was a guy at the Flemish Pot in Bruges, the guy who runs it, Peter, I think.
Oh, the Vlaamse Pot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know
and
that.
And he took us into the back room and he showed us how to make his French fries.
Ah.
He was like an evangelist with these French fries. Oh. You know, he was just crazy.
There was a stand, a fry stand in Bruges Square.
Yeah.
Pont de Belfort.
Yeah.
That's the best fries. And
so people know the best fries.
Oh, they eat sell those.
That's great. It's great to be a Belgian. I'm not English, I'm not French, and I'm not Dutch. I'm not Spanish, Portuguese, or German. I'm a Belgian, so thank you very much.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. There's more online in the radio section at ricksteves.com. That's where you can look up information on today's program, listen again in our audio archives, and find links to audio and video podcast features. You can also submit your questions and comments for Rick from our website to be included on future editions of the show, or add your comments in our ongoing message boards. Plus, send us your original haiku poems about your travels, or write up a short hometown brag. Details are in the 15 Seconds of Fame link in the radio section of our website. The people who help bring you Travel with Rick Steves include communication support from Robin Stenzel, Sonia Grosset, and Rachel Unk, with technical support from Jonathan Lee. Our theme music is composed by Jerry Frank. I'm your producer, Tim Tatton. Join us next time as we travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at aa.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.